A Benson Diary by John Murphy, and he starts with a poem by Percy Bysshe Shelley called Autumn, a Dirge. The warm sun is failing, the bleak wind is wailing, the bare boughs are sighing, the pale flowers are dying, and the year on the earth, her deathbed in a shroud of leaves dead, is lying. Come, months, come away from November to May in your saddest array. Follow the bier of the dead cold year, and like dim shadows watch by her sepulchre.
The recent death of Giorgio Armani reminded me that although we might gamely pretend it not to be so, appearance matters much, and by extension clothes are to most of us, and mostly in an entirely unconscious way, far more important than we'd freely admit. Not that fashion has ever been cheaply had. Since the time of Beau Brummel, the man who kindly gave mankind the modern suit, fashion has always been the overpriced pursuit of youth's folly. And like the pursuit of the fox, it hasn't always been a happy business for wearer or watcher. Coco Chanel's sharp chalk defined for much of the last century what was chic and what was not, perhaps particularly reinforced by the fact that in November 1963, Jackie Kennedy was wearing a Chanel suit of strawberry boucle when shots rang out. Fashions, however, aren't the preserve of the devil and Prada. Sober subjects like poetry or dull history, music and much more, are as much subject to the fashions of their times. When I did A-level, Milton's wand was already on the wane, but the spell of the romantics like Wordsworth, Keats, Lord Byron, Shelley and Coleridge still held sway. Those days too are gone. Now Yeats and Auden and Plath and Hughes speak for the age. And so it should be, for a change comes with hopeful youth that forever believes it might change the world for the better. It wants new words and a different meter for its brave march into a braver new world. For the road-wise, brave marches have been a somewhat elusive stepping time in these blustery September days. I've been thrice thwarted in trying to get from Benson to Dorchester. I know the road closures on the A4074 were announced, but it must be observed that unknown days between fixed dates own something of a Delphic prophecy. In any event, I now possess more knowledge of the narrows of roads to Newington, Drayton St. Leonard and Chislehampton than I feel was essential to my life's experience. And like the white rabbit in Alice's Wonderland, I'm forever late, late, late this autumn. Nature has been more forward. The drought of our long summer brought autumn early. Many of our trees revealed their stress in green leaf, leaving very early. Rain came too late to stop nature's play, and the season's game was up, barely before the last ball was bowled. Green is gone to wait on spring. There are lots of conkers about the woods and meadowland, even where the horse chestnuts fight for life in a battle with the bleeding canker that is gradually overwhelming them. I don't quite know why it should be, but trees have become very precious to me. We have had a great crop of figs, crab apples and plums this year. We've even had two pears to mark our pear tree's 10th anniversary. There have been plenty too of wild apples, quince and blackberries, although all so early I've not quite managed to get myself properly organised. I also had grape to make grape jelly, but alas I took my eye off the boil and the sugar tainted the jelly. Next year perhaps. Our younger dog Finn still has his passion for autumn's fruits. He picks blackberries with the best and retrieves apples and plums with professional ease. Milo, our elder, waits rather on the kindness of strangers. Indeed, Milo has crossed another marker and blazoned with a white muzzle, he dines on senior food these days. And in that repast, I too find of late I've come to table. For our own lives also come in seasons, motley and mad-capped in youth's blazing days, shod by gilded shoes in our dancing days and touched by frost in older age's uncertain steps, when we must stand mute and inglorious. And in these more troubled times, Shelley's words come into their own. He was, of course, famously troubled, trailing clouds of poetic glory, as it were, into the fragility of imagination's realm, where hallucinations peep into perception, and such dreams may come to reveal such awful truths. A great friend of mine kept a diary throughout his life, although he was perhaps only 50 when he died. In our early years as friends, I often mused what times he might recall from the riotous days of our jovial crew, and what bon mots might be mined for posterity's pen. Instead, although of London, he wrote day to day of birdsong, bluebells and beech trees, steady in the seasons, the ancient lines, his diary homeward plod that weary way, until he left the world to darkness and to me. Andrew, whom I met in London in 1977, and to whom I spoke almost every day until his death in 2009, paid no heed to the turbulence of his times, or even the difficulties his life embraced through ill health and frailty. And if, as fragile as a leaf in the gusts of autumn's wind, he was blown from life's tree, in his time his steady gaze was fixed on the visual poetics of the ritual parade of spring, summer, autumn and winter. Afterwards, when his diaries kept so carefully through his years came to light, I was disappointed it said so little of the fevered pitch of our lifetime's turbulence. But then perhaps we're all said as much as could be said of those things in the here and now. For often we remember rather what we wish had been, rather than what was. 20 years after John F. Kennedy's assassination, a poll recorded something like 80% of respondents claimed to have voted for Kennedy in 1960. They equally certainly believed they had seen Mrs. Kennedy's famous pink suit on black and white TV on that fatal day. Perhaps we are all bound to remember what might have been, as if it had been, because it gives hope to the time that follows us. And that's by John Murphy.
And he closes with another poem, this one by John Keats, called To Autumn. Where are the songs of spring? Aye, where are they? Think not of them, thou hast thy music too. While barred clouds bloom the soft dying day and touch the stubble plains with rosy hue, then in a wailful choir the small gnats mourn among the river sallows borne aloft, or sinking as the light wind lives or dies, and full-grown lambs loud bleat from hilly bourn. Hedge crickets sing, and now with treble soft, the redbreast whistles from a garden croft, and gathering swallows twitter in the skies.